So the situation in Syria, as we've described, really for much of the last 7 weeks of unrest there, is a bubble that we can only observe from the outside. Here's one characterization.
Syria is a huge disaster. I think what is happening there, I have no other word to describe it, is nothing less than an Arab Tiananmen.
An Arab Tiananmen Square, only in super slow motion over the last 7 weeks. That's Belgian politician Guy Verhofstadt talking to the European Parliament. For the latest in Syria and the world reaction, we're joined, as we often are, from Beirut by the BBC's Jim Muir, who's spent a lot of time in Damascus, but very little recently because reporters are so restricted in covering the unrest. The BBC, of course, has not been allowed into Syria over the last 7 weeks. Jim Muir, good morning.
Good morning.
So let's just begin with what's the view from the Beirut bubble this morning in Syria?
Well, the Syrian authorities confirm what we're hearing from people on the ground and protest sources and so on, that there are military actions going on in several areas. One is in and around Homs, which is Syria's third biggest city. It's north of Damascus. It has a population of around 1 million. Now, it's been the scene of a military crackdown since Saturday night, Sunday morning, and there's more firing and explosions being heard there in the last few hours. At the same time, down where it all started, at Dera in far south, that began there in mid-March, in some of the towns near Dera, Dera itself has been overrun and completely controlled by army troops for more than 2 weeks now, but some of the towns in the nearby countryside, which had remained defiant, are now being quelled as well. Apparently, we're hearing from people on the ground that troops have gone in, there have been deaths and shootings and so on. Now, the Syrian authorities are positing all this as basically an attempt to get rid of armed terrorist gangs who they say are causing mayhem and who they blame for all the trouble. But, of course, there have been many demonstrations and other people see it as a popular uprising which is being quelled by brutal military force.
And we're talking with the BBC's Jim Muir from Beirut, who's been reporting on the situation in Syria for much of the last 7 weeks of unrest there. You know, in the voices that we've been able to reach inside Syria, including your own, it seems to me there are two elements here. One is the principal difference with the situation in Egypt, and that is that the military appears to have undying loyalty to the Bashar Assad regime, and that there doesn't seem to be any sign that's going to change. But there's also this race against time for the Syrian government. As the crackdown continues, the credibility of the government erodes, which then encourages more dissent, which encourages more crackdown. You know, it's hard to see what the end game is here.
Indeed. People don't really know where this is going because there are several elements in Syria which make it different from the other Arab uprisings, especially Tunisia and Egypt. One is the fact that this is a minority sectarian regime. In other words, President Assad and his family come from the Alawite sect, which is a minority of about 10%, 12% in the country. The bulk of the population is Sunni, but there are other important minorities such as Christians, Kurds, and Druze and so on. And the general sentiment of a lot of people is they don't want to see sectarian chaos, which they believe might follow if the regime were to fall, because there's no clear alternative. That is one very big difference. The other is that Syria is at least theoretically confronting Israel still. It's not an American client state, and that makes it very, very unlikely that the West would be able to intervene as they would in Libya. So that the element of outside intervention simply isn't there. They may have harsh words, they may have sanctions imposed, but they're largely meaningless. They're moral gestures. So the regime has a free hand to that extent. It has this argument that it can use both domestically and in the foreign arena, saying that if we go, it's the deluge after us. And that's a very strong argument.
And the only credible broker inside Syria, at least in the international community, would be Iran, before we go?
I wouldn't say as a broker. No, Iran is supporting Syria. Some would say, certainly the Americans have said from Washington, that the Iranians are actually helping them in practical ways as well, which are probably hard to detect. But they've certainly given them the example of the harsh crackdown which suppressed the so-called Green Revolution after the elections in Iran in 2009. So the example is there. But in fact, the Syrians have proven much more bloodthirsty in terms of using troops, killing lots, hundreds and hundreds of people. In Iran, there were maybe a few dozen, but certainly not hundreds. There is that. But there is no real broker. The Turks tried. Turkey has a strong relationship with Syria. Prime Minister Erdogan has phoned President Assad several times. He's sent a delegation to try and talk to the Syrians about the kind of reforms, the political and economic, that could defuse the situation. But basically, they've given up in despair.
The BBC's Jim Muir reporting from Beirut, which is the best observation point for the situation, the frustrating and brutal situation inside Syria over the past 7 weeks. Jim Muir, thanks so much.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.